Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is November 20th, 2017. I'm in beautiful San Francisco, California, checking out the Gold Silver Conference, and I'm here with the most mercenary of geologists, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Busy. Much better than being bored, Kerry.
Well, you could easily be bored at one of these conferences if it's not your thing. Hey, of course, be part of the show. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. So, Mickey, big news in uranium. What's happening there?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, Cameco, the world's largest integrated nuclear energy company, mothballed the largest uranium mine in the world, McArthur River in the Athabasca Basin, produced something on the order of 10% of the world's uranium, mined uranium, plus or minus 15, 17 million pounds per year. And also the Key Lake Mill, which is the mill that that mine fed. So this is major news, supply destruction in the uranium business. It all has to do with $20 spot price for uranium. No one makes money at $20. Even the Kazakhstan in situ recovery deposits don't make money. They cut production 10% back in March or April. So, you know, we've been burdened by this near-term supply overabundance, and now that's going away.
So the price obviously responded. Is this a case of the best cure for low prices is low prices?
Absolutely. So the low prices went from $20 a pound and change over the last, couple of months. It's just been vacillating somewhere between $20 and $21 a pound. It's now, we don't have the numbers for today yet. They should be coming out any hour. But I saw something earlier today, $25 on the bid, $27 on the ask. So we would expect it to close somewhere in the $26 range. The thing that surprised me with this bid ask today was the spread. You never see a $2 spread. You know, usually on these brokerage average prices, you're seeing a quarter, maybe 50 cent spread. So that just indicates there's turmoil in the market right now. Market doesn't know what to do about this.
Obviously. So Cameco and their closure, is it a permanent closure or a what kind of closure is it exactly?
Great question, Kerry, and I got the answer to that. It's a 10-month closure. They furloughed 800 employees. They're keeping 210 employees on maintenance and standby crews, probably especially for the mill, because you got to keep things tip-top shape to start a mill up again. But the feeling is it could be longer. Here's the deal. This has happened because long-term contracts are expiring. You know, uranium companies usually go out and they make these 10-year contracts with utilities, and the utilities tend to procrastinate. And as long as they've got a contract, they don't really care. And they run kind of pseudo-private governmental public-private, you know, subsidized monopolies. And so this is really good news for the uranium business or the uranium mining business in not only the U.S. but the world. Supply destruction. In the meantime, we've got 9 more Japanese reactors scheduled to open by spring of 2018. There's 5 operating now, another 9, that's up to 14. We've got 56 power plants under construction. 26 of those are in China and India. Only two in the U.S., but we do have 2 more under construction right now. So you see this big demand looming, and where's the supply going to come from?
So here's the question, though. As far as the industry goes, it's not healthy. Do you want to be buying uranium explorers and developers now? What sector of the industry do you want to be concentrating on?
Well, I think you need to buy developers and current or past producers, so because they're ready to go. And so as soon as the price, especially ISR uranium in U.S., as soon as that goes above $40 and stays there for a while, here comes the production. So those are the companies I think that you want to look at. But you can also just play the stocks. You know, there's a stock, Uranium Energy Corp, and I am a long-term shareholder, and I'm involved with that company, and they pay me to do various things for them, including interviews. They've been sponsors in the past, but that stock went from 97, 98 cents in the first of November, and it's $1.44 today. So, you know, you could have come in right after the first of November, first week of November when this announcement was made, and picked that thing off very cheap, and you would have made 50% of your money already.
So perhaps, I mean, you and I in our monthly review, we follow uranium. We've been following it for years, and we followed it down and down and down. And now perhaps the trend has reversed, and maybe we're going to be following it up now from this point.
Well, the thing about uranium, it's such a small and volatile market that it can move up very quickly. It moves up much more quickly than it moves down, and the speculators and traders will come in. And I'm not going to tell you that this is going to solve the world's uranium oversupply, but it's just one of the things going on. Meanwhile, we have a Trump administration who is very pro-nuclear. You know, you can say about uranium, it's a green metal because it has no carbon footprint. And no matter how people that some people oppose nuclear energy, it's the cleanest thing we have for base load electricity, and it's a no-brainer for the next 20 to 30 years to supply carbon-free energy. It's the only other than hydroelectric, and there's not very many places in the world where you can build big dams anymore and make a difference. So it seems to me nuclear energy is the answer to the world's supply electrical problems for the next 2 to 3 decades till we learn how to harness fusion.
Or solar becomes practical, or
because, Carrie, come on, the sun doesn't shine 12 hours a day, and even in the sunniest parts of the world, the sun only shines 80% of the time during the day. So it's not baseload electricity, and wind is not baseload electricity because, you know, these turbines that spin around on occasion, they operate about 10% of the time, 15% of the time in the windiest places on Earth.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting because nobody cares about uranium. I mean, it is a market that the world, 99% of the people in the world are completely indifferent to. Nobody realizes it, but in the U.S., we have issues here. A lot of our nuclear power plants are getting close to EOL, end of life. They're going to have to be decommissioned. And then the decision's going to have to be made, or it's being made now. Do we build more nuclear or switch to natural gas?
They're being decommissioned in the East Coast, specifically New York, because of cheap gas. And it's you can refurbish these things. You don't have to decommission them. You don't, but you've got to be able to meet the CapEx required to renovate them. And, you know, and there's a movement afoot. You know, they're 40-year designs, and now they're being increased to 60 years. And we have a Trump administration that is absolutely pro-nuclear. And that's going to make a really big difference, in my opinion.
Well, interesting thing, like in New York State, Indian Point, okay, happens to be close to where I used to live in New York. That is produces 20% of the electricity coming down to New York City, the New York metropolitan area. And in evening times, it's even higher than that, but they never talk about that. They never really explain to you how vital it is. And yet, the whole environmental movement, or whatever movement it is, I'm not sure it's environmental, anti-progress perhaps, has been intent on shutting that plant down for years and years, and now the governor would like to do it. But the reality is, the region can't live without it.
Well, and so you mentioned 20% of New York City, or the greater New York metropolitan area, the tri-state area there. One out of every five people, every time they turn on a light switch, it's nuclear powered, right? So do you know the percentage of electricity generated in the entire U.S., what percentage that is from nuclear? It's 20%. So one out of five Americans, when they turn on a light switch, it's coming from a nuclear power plant.
And better nuclear than a lot of the coal, the old coal plants, which I remember, and I'm sure you're old enough to remember the yellow skies, the sulfur dioxide hanging in the air, like when you drive into Manhattan when they used to burn coal. It was, you know, the end of the day, you'd just be covered with grime.
Well, so, and we have a place for coal, too. I'm not going to bash the coal industry because we now have clean technology in coal. We can burn coal and we can scrub it, and it's not polluting. The Chinese and the Indians, they're really going toward nuclear, but they're building hundreds of coal-fired power plants. They're not weaning themselves off of coal. And, as much as the greenies would like to think, Kerry, wind and solar are not solutions. They are part of the contribution. But, you know, the world's power hungry, and nuclear, in most people's opinions that actually study energy markets and don't have an agenda, would say we need a mix of all the above. You know, and there's a significant amount of the far left environmental religious fundamentalist crowd that are very pro-nuclear because it's green. It is green. The founder of Greenpeace is very pro-nuclear. Bill Gates is very pro-nuclear. He's contributed $100 million or something to the development of small modular reactors. So there are answers here.
Yeah, well, nuclear just makes the most sense, provided that you have safeguards so you don't have a Fukushima again, where you have proper, adequate storage for spent fuel so that, and, you know.
Well, the real answer is going to be thorium-based reactors, which cannot melt down. We need to get away from reactors that require water to cool, and that's happening. You know, the future of nuclear energy, it can be very safe. We have to convert the types of nuclear reactors we're going to be building for the future, and that's coming. That's coming in within 10 years.
Yeah. Already. I mean, this whole crop of nuclear reactors compared to our crop that's in production now from the 60s and 70s, there's no comparison to the safety features.
Now, right. We now have Gen 3, Generation 3 reactors, and they don't require pumps to pump water to cool, and that was the real problem with Fukushima. But I'll come back to how many people died from nuclear radiation poisoning at Fukushima? A zero, okay? And there were 25,000 people killed by that tsunami.
So. Yeah, correct. So, well, we have a nuclear future, like it or not. Anyway, Mickey, it's good to see you here. We find you at Mercenary Geo on Twitter, mercenarygeologist.com, Financial Survival Network, and send us emails, kl@kerrylutz.com. We want to hear from you. And the Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Mickey, we'll talk to you again in a little more than a week and a half for the monthly review.
All right. And I would like to thank the Cambridge House for putting on a really good gold and silver summit here.